This week on Lunchbox Envy, some are so strong that they can burn through 4 pairs of latex gloves and underwear.
Wow, story time. They can be used as a painkiller, cause hallucinations, and even save an elephant's life.
And you can taste them with your anus.
It's chilies! Woohoo! Hot, 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 hot! Hot, hot, hot. Hello and welcome to Lunchbox Envy. I'm Rosie, I'm a chef and food writer, and I'm here with my QI elves, my friends, Manu and Jack.
Oh, thank you.
Hello.
This week we are touching on something very hot and spicy.
Oh, yes.
The literal chili. Mm-hmm. Probably one of my favourite ingredients, probably one of my most used ingredients, probably one of the kitchen fundamentals that if I were to teach like a sort of ingredient masterclass, how to get more flavor in your food, it would be to use more chili.
Wow, okay.
Or at least appreciate the dynamism of chili. Mm-hmm. You know, like, they are not just for heat. They have fragrance. They have, you know, fruitiness, acidity. They have so much going for them.
As we can see in front of us, we've got a bowl of chilies of 4 different kinds, and you can smell the smoked ones wafting up. The chilies are most famously hot and spicy, and that's one of the main reasons we put them in things, and it's quite a unique thing to have as a fruit, and it's because of a chemical called capsaicin. This is an odorless, flavorless molecule, but it triggers our heat receptors in our mouth,
right,
and makes us feel like we're being exposed to heat.
On fire.
Yeah.
Oh my God. Body. I didn't realize it was odorless and flavorless.
Yeah, it doesn't taste of anything. Mm. We'll be talking a lot more about this in my lunchbox, so Okay. Hold on to your hats.
And chilies, you know, they appear in our eating, in food, in so many more ways than just as a raw ingredient, because the other big function that chilies have are as a condiment, right? Mm. Like as a topping, a sauce, oil, like all of these different ways that they show up in food. You guys might be able to tell me, they must be grown in incredible numbers.
Yeah, well, mm-hmm. I just to your point on flavour, I remember a formative moment at university where I would go to the burrito place. I'd always get my medium sauce because they always asked, do you want mild, medium, spicy? One day I opted for the hot sauce, which was green. And it honestly just, it tasted so different because of the flavour of the fruit of the chilli that I remember thinking, why do they like reduce these sauces to just their hotness. Like there's so much more to it's not it was hotter, but it wasn't just hotter, it was like fruitier and somewhat zingier, and and yeah, you could tell because they were different colors, right?
My hot take is 9 times out of 10 the green salsa is better than the red salsa.
Yes,
because I think jalapenos are one of the best flavored chilies, and they tend to be the ones that make green salsas, not exclusively, but a lot of the time, and their flavour is unmatched, personally. But anyway, is it a fruit?
Yep.
It is a fruit.
Okay.
Well done. You got that one right.
Yes.
You're learning.
Seeds
finally.
Inside, it's a fruit. Seeds outside, it's an alien.
But yeah, I think the chili we're going to be talking most about today is the Capsicum annuum, which is the most commonly bred one. A self-pollinating fruit, and they're quite sweet. There's like a massive variety of spice levels. Mm. Some have like literally no heat at all.
Yeah. Is that like peppers, like bell peppers? Yeah, okay, fine.
And they're all capsicum.
Right, okay.
Yeah,
because in Australia, they call peppers capsicum.
Right.
And I genuinely was like, what is this, Shakespeare? what are you talking about? It's a pepper.
Mm-hmm. It's a lovely word.
The pepper is confusing because I think we talked about it in the pepper episode, is that idiot Columbus went west and found what you call the New World, and tried these chili peppers, and they gave him such a spicy hit that he was like, these must be related to black pepper as we know it, and which is why there's that linguistic mystery there.
Yeah.
Because, yeah, you go into a British supermarket, ask for a red pepper, it will never have any spice.
You'd hope it wouldn't.
No. Yeah, unless you get really unlucky.
Yeah.
Interestingly, in parts of the Midwestern US, they call bell peppers with zero heat mangoes.
What? Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, I looked into why, because it seems so out of the blue. But basically, when fruit was imported in the 1600s, there was no refrigeration, there was no canning, so most of it was pickled. And so one of the things they got was mangoes, mm-hmm. pickled. They all got all sorts of other things, like pickled onions, pickled gherkins, pickled apples and stuff, like an awful lot of pickled fruit. And so they sort of thought the word mango meant the pickling process. So it would say on your jar, like, mangoes. So they started using the word mango for pickling. So now nothing's pickled. But some of the things that were pickled were the peppers.
But what do they then call mangoes?
They still call mangoes mangoes.
Confusing.
But they probably call them like Alfonso. They'll use the variety.
Right.
But it is confusing.
I was looking into the etymology of chili.
Oh, yeah?
Oh, yeah.
So it's from the Aztec Nahuatl, chili, which can be spelt in multiple ways, which is also very confusing. But the country Chile has nothing to do with the food.
Coincidence.
And no one knows why Chile, the country, is called Chile.
That's a good point.
I think it's because they're really chill. They're very nice people.
Yeah, the word capsicum comes from the Latin for box, capsa. Probably because bell peppers are roughly box-shaped and they
They do
hollow inside.
Look like boxes, Which is also why they're very satisfying to cut.
Yes.
Oh, you can just slice off those cheeky bits.
On etymology, I find it odd that we use two words for the capsicum as an adjective. There is spicy and hot. And both of them aren't really perfect because we use hot to describe the temperature and we use spicy to refer to... Well, there's a whole range of spices, you know, cinnamon and cloves. Like, you wouldn't describe a Christmas cake as spicy, even though it is heavily spiced. So I advocate for a new word.
Oh, God.
Because in French they have épicé, which means spiced, and then they have piquant. There is a word piquant in English. I think we should make chilies piquant again.
But I think of piquant in English as meaning more... tart.
Right.
Ooh. That's how I would refer to a piquant thing, is like, oh, my cheeks have gone inside my mouth. Do you know what I mean? Like,
I see.
Yeah. What's the feeling? My feeling is there's like loads of different types of chilies, but actually, are they mostly varietals of species?
Yes. So there's not actually loads and loads of species. So there's 26 known wild ones and 5 domesticated ones. But they come in lots of, physically, so many different varieties and colours. Like, have you guys heard of Bolivian rainbow peppers?
No, but they sound amazing.
They are stunning. They're like ornamental, but you can eat them.
Wow.
They're like green, yellow, purple, orange, all of the colours on one plant.
On one.
They're stunning.
Amazing.
Wow, I'm picturing tie-dye.
Yeah, no, it's really, really nice.
I found one, the smallest chilies in the world are in Laos, and they're known as mouse droppings.
Aww. Are they really spicy?
I think they're medium spicy.
Because there's a Mexican chili as well that's really, really small, chile piquin, and they're really tiny, but they're really spicy.
Generally, rule of thumb is that, I mean, it's, I don't know how true this is, but they all say, like, smaller chilies, the hotter.
Yeah.
So, Rosie, which part of the chili is the hottest?
It's the pith and membrane, not the seeds.
Well,
is that
done.
Right?
You didn't fall
exactly
asleep.
Right.
Because when I'm deseeding a chili, that's the bit I really focus on not getting my fingers on if I'm not wearing gloves.
Yeah.
One of my first ever jobs in cooking that wasn't in like a cafe in Somerset, which is what I'd done before, I was a stage in Ottolenghi, in Islington actually, the one on the road.
Nice.
And I worked there every Monday, and basically all I did was chop chili and peel ginger. And I would get through like 18 pairs of gloves a day because, but also they were always too big for me. So I would spend a good portion of the day without gloves on. And that was always really bad because at the end of the day, my hands would just be like so sore and red. But it was a fundamentally important job in that Ottolenghi because he puts up a load of chili and ginger in his cooking.
Ottolenghi.
Ottolenghi.
How are you peeling the ginger, by the way?
With a spoon.
Yeah, it's a teaspoon.
It's the
best way.
Were
you about to drop that? No, we all know it.
I learned it in Ottolenghi on that job.
So just to reiterate for the listeners, don't use a knife or a vegetable peeler on your ginger. Mm-mm. Use a teaspoon.
So good.
Yeah.
Into all those
much
little
more efficient
crevices. Or just don't peel your ginger.
Yeah, that's the other thing I've started doing is not peeling my ginger.
Also fine.
Can't tell.
Yeah. Yeah, all the goodness is in the peel.
I mean, maybe give it a scrub because that's where the pesticides are. But did you know the name for the pit is actually the placenta?
No, it is not. No.
Yeah, it is.
That is so akin to what a placenta feels like.
Really?
Ooh. Spicy. It's very spicy coming out of the placenta.
Oh, my God.
All good. No, no issues, no drams. Just it wasn't looking very good. Tom needed to have a sit down. Anyway, he was feeling terrible. I just give him birth. Okay, it is time for our first lunchbox today, and that's me. I've brought it. As per usual, it's delicious.
Whoa. Look at this.
Yeah. Do you like hot sauces? Chili, condiments?
Yeah, but like there's a medium spicy limit for me, I think.
Medium spicy. Ooh. Jack, where are you at in the spice level?
Yeah, I would say, I have it pretty hot, actually, because my wife can't manage that.
I think I'm hot, but I'm not like, I'm hotter than you, but I'm not hot as in like insane hot, and Tom eats hotter spices than me and copes better than I do.
Mm-hmm. Got it.
I think I'm getting there.
Yeah, I'm hotter than my wife for sure.
Perfect. Right. This is my piri piri sauce, and I have been on a deep obsession with piri piri sauce recently because, as I think I mentioned in a previous episode, my friends Simon and Izzy went to Mozambique and they brought me back a bottle of piri piri sauce, and it really just lit a fire in me, figuratively and literally, because I was just so impressed by the depth of this sauce and also struck by how utterly rubbish all piri piri sauce is that I've eaten before.
Really? That's quite a good idea for a segment, is like, because it happens to me so much where you try like the original of something or the way it's meant to be eaten, and then you just get ruined for it forever. Mm-hmm. Like the one that comes to my mind is eating a grape in a vineyard in Albania, and I was like, oh my God, this tastes of grapiness, and you go into the supermarkets and they just don't taste anything.
The problem with just a lot of produce in the UK is like,
well, yeah, but I reckon it works the other way when you go to Bakewell and you have a Bakewell pudding for the first time, and it tastes so nice.
Mm-hmm. Nando's is probably the most famous peddler of peri peri in this country and probably the world, actually. Mm-hmm. It is a South African born peri peri chicken chain, but it is incredibly popular in this country. Cool. And Nando's also don't call it piri piri, it's called peri peri. So in this country, we say peri peri. Actually, piri piri simply means pepper in Swahili, which is one of the South African dialects. Mm-hmm. But peri peri is kind of like a British English derivative of that. It's not a very accurate, and also it's what they use in Portugal sometimes as well.
Oh, so it's not like a trademark thing. It's like peri peri, but not.
No, it's definitely not. It's truly like anglicization of that word.
Wow.
So I'm running out of this Mozambican peri peri sauce that I'm desperately obsessed with, and I was like, I need to find a way to create this myself. I need to basically reverse engineer the sauce at home, away from Mozambique, because I don't have enough air miles to get there. So I sat down and I tasted it and I tasted it. I promise I didn't eat too much time. I promise you there's still one portion left. And basically tried to figure out what was in it, bought the ingredients and made my own version.
Wonderful. Mm. That's such a good skill.
Great. Anyway, let's try my not Nando's Nando's chicken.
Oh, thank you, Rosie.
Here you go, sweetheart.
Thank you, my love.
I've basically just air fried in Alex's air fryer four chicken thighs that I dry brined, and then made my own piri piri sauce that I'm exceptionally proud of.
Oh, nice.
Oh, you should be proud. That is fantastic.
Now, that's good. That's good sauce.
Wow. That's so fruity.
Right?
Yeah.
Mm. So in my sauce, I was not able to get the traditional African bird's eye chili pepper that goes into piri piri. Mm-hmm. Oh. Also, sometimes it's the Malagueta pepper, which is like a Brazilian Afro-Portuguese pepper. Mm. They're bird's eye chilies. They're really fruity. They're really spicy. Mm-hmm. And they are the pepper for piri piri. You can get them I've seen them in this country. Ridley Road Market, I reckon you might be able to get them.
Yeah.
Dried, maybe not even fresh, but I wanted to be able to make this something that I could make
all
regularly.
The time. Yeah, yeah.
So what I did was I used a combination of really bang average normal red chilies that I bought from Co-op.
Oh, wow, like the kind of fat, chunky ones.
Yeah, the ones that like on the packet don't have a name of brand of a chili. They just say red and green chilies. Mm-hmm. I don't know what chili they are, but they're a chili. Sometimes they're king spicy and sometimes they're really not spicy at all. It is literally like eating a bloody red bell pepper. Mm-hmm. So I got 3 or 4 of those and I got 2 bird's eye chilies, red bird's eyes. I wanted heat, but I wasn't sure I could cope with an exclusively bird's eye chili sauce at the quantity that I wanted to make it. Mm. And then the other things that I could taste, or I thought I could taste in the Mozambican version, were kind of like a little bit of herbal fragrance. So I put some dried oregano in there. I thought I could taste vinegar. There's a red wine vinegar in my sauce. Mm-hmm. Fruitiness that I wasn't getting from my chilies, I added some tomato paste.
Ooh.
There is sugar in there, which I added. There's also vegetable oil. And then in terms of like savouriness, as I mentioned, like Maggi seasoning. Mm-hmm. In West African cooking, Maggi is actually a really important, or certainly chicken bouillon powders, like either Maggi stock cubes or the sauce, are very popular and they use quite a lot. And I learned that when working on some African projects a few years ago.
Yeah, it's crazy. It's a Swiss brand.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so I was like, I need to put some Maggi in there. And then I put a piece of one clove of garlic and a half an onion.
Wow.
Oh. And what I learned is that there is a bit of variation as to what piri piri can look like in Mozambique, even in its truest form. Like some places, it's literally the chilies, lemon juice and salt. Mm. And the chilies are left to soak in lemon juice for a couple of days. And then they're pounded with salt and then they're drained. And that is your sauce. Wow. And they're so fruity and so fragrant that you don't need anything else. Simon, who had been to Mozambique, my friend, he is Mozambican. He has Mozambican heritage. And he got his grandma's recipe and she mashes her chilies with whiskey.
Ooh.
Which I was like, oh, that's going to be spicy, that one. So obviously piri piri is like really known as a sort of Portuguese thing as well. Mm-hmm. I would say probably if you ask British people in the UK who've ever been to Nando's that this is Portuguese food. It's not South African or Afro-Portuguese food. Do you know what I mean? Like, I actually don't think the reconnaissance is there for that this is not white food. This is African food.
I have no idea. I think because my mum was the one who was obsessed with Nando's and she, the first time she tried it was in Zimbabwe.
Yeah.
But I think it spread out that way. Yeah. So for her, it's always like a very African.
They bordered, didn't they?
Yeah. So Nando's, just for like a little context, Nando's was founded in Johannesburg in South Africa by a Portuguese-born man called Fernando Duarte and a South African man called Robert Brosin. They'd been visiting a Portuguese Mozambican takeaway called Chicken Land and they'd been eating the peri peri there and they were like, we're going to buy this place and we're going to turn it into something else. And they'd made it into Nando's.
The Ray Kroc of the chicken world.
Mm. But like there is a sort of quite dark history around it. And I do think it's important for me to give you that. I know that's not my role in the podcast. I'm not the history person, but like, so let's just give you a brief rundown of like what peri peri should mean to people. So basically the sauce is named after the chili, which I said peri peri in Swahili means pepper. It was the bird's eye chili. It actually came over in, you guessed it, the Colombian exchange. But the Portuguese, who were colonizing parts of South Africa, Southern Africa as in the continent, brought it with them and it became part of the ecology.
Gastronomic ecology. I think it's fascinating that all chilies come from South and Central America, and yet they've spread so quickly around the world. You couldn't imagine like Indian food without the chili, or Korean food without the chili. Which that would have been the case pre what 1500.
So basically, once the chili hit East Africa, it got called piri piri, and then it became a cultivar known as African bird's eye, and the Portuguese were formalizing control and, you know, taking over basically parts of Angola, Mozambique, Guinea-Bissau, parts of Africa. And the Portuguese Empire encouraged Portuguese to settle in these new colonies, right? So lots of Portuguese people went over there, and both them and the indigenous peoples of those regions adapted this chili into their cooking and sort of similarly adapted different techniques from Portugal. So for example, Mozambican indigenous people didn't cook with lemon before the Portuguese arrived, and then they suddenly started marinating their chicken in lemon, doing all these things. But, you know, unsurprisingly, the Portuguese point blank refused to grant equal rights to African populations in their colonies. And by the 1960s, so fast forward quite a long time, there was a big civil war. Mm-hmm. Angolans, Mozambicans and Guineans fought for their freedom. And in 1974, there was a coup and Portugal was removed from power. So...
Didn't Che Guevara help? He was sent over to Angola to fight for the...
Serious?
Well, if he did, thank you very much, Mr. Che. Mm. I didn't know.
I think why the... this is off tangent, but the Angolan flag has like a communist sickle on it.
So anyway, when this happened, a lot of that Portuguese settler population that had been in those countries for a fair while went back to Portugal and were known as retornados.
Mm.
But they brought with them a lot of this Angolan, Mozambican, Ghanaian culture, particularly in food and cooking. And suddenly these dishes, this type of chicken, this peri-peri sauce, was getting really, really popular in Portugal. And actually in Mozambique... the most popular way of using peri-peri is with shrimp because it's a big coastal region. Yeah. It's absolutely beautiful part of the world. I'm desperate to go to Mozambique. Mm-hmm. And in South Africa, they often serve roasted cashews with peri-peri sauce. I read, which I thought sounded amazing as well. Mm-hmm. Pop that on your cashew and smoke it. It's a very spicy cashew. But anyway, basically it wasn't until the 60s when the Portuguese settlers came back from Africa to Portugal that this became like this really popular thing, and in the Algarve it really took off and became this like big moment. You'd go out for a peri-peri chicken. And so in South Africa, around the same time, 1987, when Nando's was founded, they knew, this Portuguese-born man and this South African man knew that this was taking off in Europe, and they were like, hang on, we've got a good idea here. This might go somewhere. So basically, in 1992, the first Nando's in the UK was opened, and Nando's 1,000th store opened in 2012. There's probably more than that now. I don't actually know in the UK. But it went wild in the UK. It's one of the most successful brand growths, you know, in hospitality chain that anyone's ever seen. It's still privately owned, which I thought was so crazy considering how much money this company must make. You could sell that off for a lot of money
if
you wanted to.
It's like the top 20 fast food chains in terms of revenue worldwide.
Is it?
Yeah.
Wow, I thought it was just really popular here. I didn't realise it was like a global...
I actually also thought it was interesting to read that in 2018, Indeed, the recruitment website named it as one of the UK's... Well, it named it as the sixth best private sector employer in terms of, like, employee ratings. Mm. So apparently it is actually a great place to work.
I was going
to
say that's because they don't have to do much. Everyone else is going off and getting all of their own drinks and stuff.
That's true. It does. I think it's a weird niche because it sits sort of in between fast food and restaurant culture because don't you order at the start and then they bring it to the table, but that's
it. Mm-hmm. Truthfully, I don't rate the sauces. Taste my peri-peri sauce. Mm. That is great. But the Nando's hot does not taste like that.
You need to make, what is it, four? How many are there? So there's a mile.
Four quarters.
There's 10. There's more than 10.
There's 10.
So the most famous ones, the Nando sauces.
Yeah,
so
there's plainish,
lemon and herb, both of which are very, very mild. Mm-hmm. Medium hot, extra hot, extra, extra hot. And then separate to that, there is actually a runaway success, Peronaise, which I think sounds like perineum. I'm sorry. I cannot look at the word Peronaise and not think of like, that would have been soothing after birth. But anyway, turns out it's literally peri-peri sauce mixed with mayonnaise.
Oh, so is this the stuff you can buy in the supermarket?
Yeah. But you can buy all their sauces in the supermarket.
Oh.
They have very sensibly marketed them all because they've got so popular.
Mm-hmm. It's one of the few places on the high street you can get liver. That's my standard Nando's order is chicken livers.
All this to say, I thought it was interesting how when I tasted a probably really simply made Mozambican peri-peri sauce, I tasted all of these different things and it took me all of these different ingredients to get to something that resembles it. And I thought that it just spoke to the like real insane variety and like flavor possibility of chilies. Like that, yes, they stimulate our heat receptors, but they have this incredible flavor profile that is so useful in cooking. Mm-hmm. And yes, it's annoying if you're not a spicy fan that you might not be able to really benefit from that. But if you do like spice, I guess I just encourage you to like look into different types of chili, look into what is out there and what you can play with in your food, because there is so much flavor in it. For example, I remember when I first properly tried good Caribbean food. Mm. I'd always been terrified of using Scotch bonnets because all I knew them for was high heat. Mm-hmm. But if you stab a Scotch bonnet and you put it in a curry or a rice dish or something and just let it sit, and like, yes, it gives heat, but it has this incredible fruity flavour that is so delicious. Mm. And I crave it. I crave that sometimes. Yeah, I suppose that's my lunchbox, just talking about
it's fantastic.
One of the nation's favourite sauces and where it actually comes from and what chilies can do for you. Right. I think it's time to get spicy again and eat something else with our second lunchbox. Jack's got peri peri all over his shirt.
Oh,
that's how much I enjoyed it.
Who's up next?
I brought something that you are not allowed to get near.
Ooh.
It's this canister of something hotter than pure capsaicin, all right? This is very hard to find. So I want to talk to you about capsaicin, the odourless, flavourless molecule that triggers our heat receptors, specifically one called TRPV1.
Mm-hmm. That's my favourite one.
Yeah? Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
It's a good one.
What's your favourite one?
TRPV2.
Nice. No, the sequel. Yeah, often the sequel's better
really
than the original,
good.
Isn't
they're
it?
They're both really good.
Like The Godfather and Toy Story. Do you know what it stands for?
No.
It's a transient receptor potential vanilloid.
Vanilloid?
So, interestingly, capsaicin is made via a process that uses vanillin, which is the stuff that makes vanilla taste of vanilla.
So, in BDSM and stuff like that, when people accuse other people of being vanilla, vanilla is actually spicy.
Well, yeah.
Kind of.
Yeah. It's sort of chemically related to capsaicin. Uh-huh. So the TRPV1 is used to detect noxious chemicals and heat. And it usually triggers when the temperatures in our mouth go above 43 degrees Celsius. Mm-hmm. But capsaicin is very good at tricking our receptors, which is why we feel heat.
Mm-hmm.
It was developed by the plants through evolution to deter mammals because they eat the chilies and destroy the seeds, whereas birds, who are immune to capsaicin, are able to eat the whole plant and not destroy the seeds and then fly away somewhere else, poo out the seeds. Mm-mm. We've come across this before, I'm sure.
Oh.
It's also a natural fungicide, so it prevents pests and fungus, specifically mold.
Well, yeah, that's why it's been used historically as a preservative, right?
Like, well, there you go.
Yeah.
Very clever.
Because it deters most mammals because of its heat, which most, and actually most humans find unpleasant in large enough quantities.
So I've been chatting to the people at the Chili Pepper Institute, who's affiliated with New Mexico.
The good people at the Chili Pepper Institute.
So friendly. Really? I actually can't. One of the founders, Dr. Paul Bosland, he's broken down the heat into like five distinct phases.
Okay.
So one is how hot it is. So that's the thing we've been talking about. The second is how fast the heat comes on. Mm-hmm. So how quickly you go from like, oh, this is a bit, to like, oh my God, I'm going to die.
Yeah, because some are slow and some are fast.
And then the third is whether the heat kind of lingers or dissipates quickly. The fourth is actually where you sense the heat. So there's different parts of the mouth that are stimulated. And then whether the heat, apparently there's like flat heat and sharp heat.
Oh, interesting.
So that's not even to do with the incredible flavour wheel that you have, citrusy, all of these mad notes, but that's just in, like, experiencing heat.
So the two questions, are people born with different spice tolerances and can you change your level of spice tolerance?
Yeah.
So the answer to question one is yes, people have different numbers of TRPV1 receptors in their mouth. So you're genetically predisposed to spice tolerance. The answer to question two, yes, if you're exposed to lots of chilies, you get more and more used to them. And the opposite's true. If you've never had a chili pepper in your life, then the first one you have is likely to be quite intense.
I actually ate one, not knowing what it was. The larder.
Oh.
And then my mum had to like pour milk down me. And then for years, I really liked the flavour of chili and would always order spicy food. And then I never could eat it because I just wasn't used to it. But a bit like you say, I basically wore myself down to liking it and getting able to tolerate heat.
Yeah, it's a neurological phenomenon, so you basically just get used to it. It's called habituation. It's a bit like when you put socks on, you can feel them, but then they're constantly there throughout the day and you just ignore them. Basically.
I had this theory actually about this before I had done any research, just because I'm really clever. But my friend was addicted to sriracha when we were at uni, and I was literally like, you're putting more and more on every time you eat. Yeah. And I think it's because you can't taste anything else.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Like you've actually deleted the rest of your taste buds because, you know, what?
I was going to say that's actually a myth. You don't destroy taste buds.
Obviously, you don't delete your taste buds.
No. But it is an interesting point. Is people will think that it's an overwhelming sensation, but it's not technically a taste. Mm. So you're not drawing any.
So you never taste capsaicin.
No.
You feel chili.
It's flavorless.
Oh yes,
it's
of
hot
course.
Temperature. What?
I am one with the chili. But also injury. If you're injured, your body makes anti-inflammatories, which increase the sensitivity to noxious chemicals when you're hurt.
Really?
So that you don't damage yourself again, essentially.
So if I break my toe, my chili receptors will be more...
No, because it's local. As if you cut your mouth, then the chili response is
stronger. But interestingly, I can't believe how much pregnancy and birth has come up in this episode, but when I was pregnant, I literally couldn't eat spicy food because of acid reflux and basically, like, you know, my sensitivity to that. I wonder if it's a similar thing of pregnancy, like, hormonally makes you really sensitive.
Do you think babies in utero can, like...
It does pass through the placenta as a flavour, I think, because I know garlic did and I ate loads of garlic.
Yeah. Because that's the thing, like getting them used to certain flavours if you eat lots during pregnancy, bitter flavours, sweet.
So, how does one measure the hotness of chilies? You may have heard about the Scoville organoleptic test.
I have heard of Scovilles.
So Scoville heat units were named after American pharmacist Wilbur Scoville, who designed an experiment way back in 1912, where he basically got volunteers to try chili extracts, which were diluted with sugar water, until the majority of them couldn't taste the chili. Okay,
right.
So it's essentially a measure of how much you have to dilute something before you can't taste it.
Okay.
Mm. Okay. And it goes obviously from zero, whereby you can't taste the chilies from the start, which is what bell peppers has. And then pure capsaicin is 16 million Scoville heat units. So basically, for every milliliter of pure capsaicin you have, you need 16 million milliliters, which is 16,000 liters, to mask the taste.
Wow.
So it's a bit like those
facts. That's actually a really useful thing to know. I'm really glad I know that now. It helps me understand it a bit more, like what conceptually
and theoretically,
a Scoville is.
Theoretically, you could do the Scoville scale with, say, garlic or chocolate. The shark Scoville scale, where you just drew a drop of blood and it's, you know, that famous factoid about sharks being able to smell blood from 2 miles away.
Yeah, and bears that can smell the menstruation.
So obviously the Scoville scale originally was quite experiential and required an awful lot of volunteers. Mm-hmm. But in the 1970s, someone developed a liquid chromatography, which is actually how we do it now. So you can basically measure how much capsaicin is in your chili without having to go through this process of diluting it more and more and more and testing on volunteers. Mm. But we still use the scale as it started out. And so we sort of retconned the science into using the Scoville scale.
Nice. Do you know why Scoville was doing this?
I looked into his life and he was quite a boring man, but
I really wanted him to be spicier, he's really beautiful. He looks very cool.
Oh!
But yeah, he was measuring it because he wanted to use it as an analgesic.
I mean, it is spelled that way, but I never
heard
it pronounced.
Analgesic.
What is it again?
So it's a painkiller. Because capsaicin can, like, you know, like deep heat rub.
Yeah.
It can confuse your pain receptors.
Totally.
And exactly.
So anyway, this brings me on to super hot peppers and the kind of silly game to sort of breed the hottest chili pepper out there, right? So we've already said bell peppers are zero on the Scoville scale. Tabasco's 5,000.
Okay.
I believe habaneros are anything in the range of 300,000 to 500,000. So this whole sort of race is a bit like the land speed record to grow the hottest chili pepper. It's quite a recent thing. So nobody really was doing it in the 20th century. We all thought that the habanero had that, you know, the ceiling basically for Scoville heat units. And I think it does in the wild. But then it was reported that the Indian military were looking into the ghost pepper for weaponizing. Basically, like pepper spray, which is pure capsaicin, is like really horrible irritant when you get it in your face. So you can see how it'd be used as a weapon. And then suddenly people got the idea that, oh, maybe you could breed something that was more than a million Scoville heat unit. So how far on the Scoville scale from 0 to 16 million do you think they've got? What's the world record hottest pepper as of July 2026?
So really does throw me off because my whole basis was going to be the Reaper, Carolina Reaper, and the Ghost Pepper is like, those are the hottest chilies I know of.
Right. Well,
that
no.
I can think of, but there must be higher ones.
No, so you've cut to the chase. The Carolina Reaper was developed by a man called Ed Curry. In America in 2013. It held the Guinness World Record for the hottest ever chili pepper. Obviously, they have to test a number of them and they vary within the variety. But on average, it has 1.57 million Scoville heat units. And the hottest one had 2.2 million. So we're talking...
Jesus Christ.
Like twice as hot as the ghost pepper, which was believed to be the hottest natural mm-hmm. pepper.
Okay, but as time has gone on, so there must be something hotter.
Well, now the same... That held the record for 10 years. And in 2023, Curry dropped... Pepper X.
Oh, God.
Which has 2.693 million Scoville heat units. And it's currently...
You and I could never.
No.
The hottest at the moment.
Would be, oh, my God. I think you'd be hospitalised with them.
Probably.
But the top 10 chilies in the world, according to Guinness, are all from either the USA or the UK. Or Trinidad, actually.
That's because we're the only countries that can be asked to put money into developing spicy hot chilies. Because we've got a problem with male-like fragility. But anyway.
Oh. Well, that's the thing. Is like to me, it's a bit silly. Because these aren't particularly edible. Like,
no,
when you,
right?
Like when you eat one, your eyes stream. Your mouth is like on fire for 3.5 hours. You're dribbling. Mm-hmm. Like the guy said, he had cramps for the next like mm-hmm. 3 days in his stomach. Like it's really not fun. But what they get from it is notoriety. So they're all really well branded. Mm-hmm. And what happens is when you, so the guy who developed the Trinidad Moruga, mm-hmm. Moruga is a part of Trinidad. He got $10,000 in sales in the 2 days following his announcement because hot sauce companies were desperate for his seeds. Mm-hmm. And they were like, they can sell so many, you know, if you say this sauce has pepper X in, you can appeal to the extremes of capitalism, masculinity,
thrill seekers.
Oh, yeah. They will go mad for this pepper X sauce, even if you like functionally can't taste the difference between pepper X or Carolina Reaper, whatever.
Yeah, you know that at every barbecue or meat festival that happens, food festivals like that, there's a hot sauce stand with a man in a wife beater, potentially bald, with loads of skulls and crossbones. And do you remember when we did that episode where we ate the sour sweeties? Toxic waste. I'm thinking that kind of branding is on all of those hot sauces that
exactly
are like...
Exactly right.
Ghost of you, you're dead. Because like, it's the hottest thing you've ever
eaten. The anus melter, the Komodo dragon.
Do you think it's like a kind of economies of scale thing? Like if you make a really, really, really hot pepper, you don't need to use as much...
Oh, I see. You mean if you develop one with 5 million Scoville heat units, you could make 1,000 bottles of Tabasco. Yes. Yeah.
Well, no, because that's not how those sauces are made, right? They have to have the contents of the chili as well to make the colour, I mean, obviously you could just fake the whole thing, sure, but like the flavour of the chilies, you hope, is part of it as much as the heat. And like, even though, yes, in theory, that if you've got the right heat level from something that was created purely for that, you could fake it, but then you wouldn't have all the benefits of using whole chili and the chili flavor.
You can synthesize pure capsaicin, so you could theoretically drop a little bit of that in your hot sauce.
So then it's just for marketing.
Yeah,
surely.
I think so. But he's got loads of interviews on Vice and stuff.
Well, I was going to say, I think he got his Guinness record for the Pepper X Pepper on hot ones.
Hot ones,
right?
Did
on
he?
Hot ones, yeah.
Oh,
so I think they have
PR.
Like a whole ceremony.
Yeah, well, he actually claims he's got more in the wings and he hasn't verified them with Guinness because why would you? So basically, Ed Curry, he's got one. It's called Apollo Pepper and he reckons it's about 3 million on the Scoville scale.
Wow.
And he's like, I'm not going to get it verified until someone challenges me, basically.
Right.
Well, no, like, I kept coming across this question of like competition and masculinity and all of those crazy branding things like the skulls and the wife beaters. And I was like... Why do men do this? It's such a weird thing. And there's a couple of scientists who are trying to...
Why do you do it, Jack?
trying to figure out the same thing. So a study published in 2016 found that like male test participants were doing it for the like social reward. So
yes.
If someone sees you like eating, chomping down on this crazy chili and like manning it out, not showing the pain, then everyone's going to be like,
nobody,
wow.
Nobody eats the Pepper X off camera. The whole point is you're doing it performatively. And then you get all this good, on, oh my God, bro, you ate the chili. That's so hot.
Bro, it's really interesting.
I ate the hottest thing in South America, and I'm going to take you with me.
Can anybody eat too much chili?
Okay, so I was wondering this too, because it is a trick of, it's the trick of the capsaicin, right? You're not actually like burning your body.
Yeah,
it's
no
just
damage.
Yeah, your brain's like, oh my God, what is this?
Crazy that that man who ate whatever Pepper X was like getting body cramps from that.
Yeah. Mm.
Well, you've got heat receptors throughout your body.
Yeah, so it will trigger everything. So yes, you can't, the symptoms are awful. So if you eat really, really hot chilies, you can get swelling, nausea, vomiting, eye pain, diarrhea, abdominal pain, heartburn, acid reflux. Headaches is the one that I'm the most scared of. So in 2018, there was a 34-year-old man who developed a thunderclap headache after eating a Carolina Reaper. And this is like one of the most excruciating headaches, apparently.
And it's like a big red flag in The Pit, a show I watch a lot, and basically means I'm qualified to practice medicine. A thunderclap headache is a bad thing. That means you are having something going on in your brain.
It's not good. So he went to hospital, he got a CT scan, and it showed that several arteries in his brain had constricted because the chili was so hot. He had to like stay in hospital for a few days. It was not good. But you can also hallucinate. So there are loads of reports of people who have eaten crazy, crazy hot chilies, and then they go into like a weird kind of ketamine hole. Like, it's mildly euphoric. And again, the kind of chili high thing is a confusing one, but a lot of people think it's got to do with the fact that your body's in so much pain, it's releasing lots of endorphins to kind of try and fix the pain.
Anyway, all this is to say, brings me right back to my lunchbox. Pure capsaicin, 16 million Scoville heat units. There's a thing called resiniferatoxin. Okay, now this doesn't come from a capsicum. It's found from a Moroccan euphorbia, which is basically like a cousin of the cactus.
I have a euphorbia in my garden.
Do you? Mm-hmm. Wonderful.
Is it edible?
No.
It's toxic. I don't think any of them are edible, to be honest. But this euphorbia makes an analogue of capsaicin called resiniferatoxin.
Okay.
Which reacts in our body in the same way. It measures 16 billion on the Scoville scale, so it's 1,000 times hotter than pure capsaicin.
So can I ask a theoretical question that you might not have the answer for? What would happen if you opened that canister in this room? Like, would we pass out? Would we die?
No, because it's odourless.
Oh God, yeah. You have to taste it in our mouths.
You have to taste it, but it's so strong you can't even taste it. It chemically slices through your nerves. It's a molecular scalpel.
Ugh.
And actually, scientists are looking into its anesthetic effects, because it basically just kills the nerves.
What? So would you ever be able to taste again if you ate it?
Well, as long as you didn't coat your mouth with it, I think. But
wow, that's
crazy.
What
if you do Rosie's like little bloop with your index finger and then like a tiny blah.
Yeah, which part of your tongue would you sacrifice first? But yeah, no, it's powerful
question.
Stuff.
Oh, wow.
But I just think it's crazy that like the plant world is so full. You remember the Lost Foods episode where I was talking about silphium and the pharmacologist, the Turkish scientist who was just like, so impressed with all the chemical properties of this plant. Like, plants are where we get most of our drugs from, and like our new antibiotics and stuff. Like, anyway, so that's what I brought in my lunchbox.
And very masculine of you. Congrats. Why are some chilies hotter than others? Like, how do we get such variation?
It's a great question. I mean, genetic mutation is mostly part of it, which is how we end up with like different dog breeds. But then there's also, if you stress out a chili plant, it starts making more capsaicin because it thinks it's about to die, and so it focuses on seed production. It's like, please, just my last wish is to give birth. Whatever.
Yeah.
So the way you stress a chili plant is to give it warmer temperatures in the night or deny it enough water.
Ooh,
which, depending on your
sound like the heat wave
idea
recently.
Of plant psychology and morality, is sounds like torture. But you know, so actually, a lot of these brand names about torture are probably quite relevant, because you get more heat for your own torture from the torture of the plant. It's all based. It's an economy based on misery and cruelty.
I don't like it.
How exactly would you breed one? Really hot chili.
You basically get two known hot chilies, and then you rub their flowers together. And
heard that one before.
Two chili peppers who love each other very much. And that's how you cross-pollinate them, and you plant new variety, and you just hope that this one will grow up with the traits that you want from each. Mm-hmm. So if you do it on scale, if you grow like 1,000 different versions of these two,
then you can take the hottest two and then do it again, and then you just generations basically keep growing a hotter and hotter version.
I think one of the things I love talking about, so her name was Denise Kuhn at the Chili Pepper Institute. She was talking about how for a while they were working with a lot of these like macho chili spicy growers, and then realized like this is actually a little bit toxic, and their institute went the entire like a completely different way and started focusing on different flavors and like different notes. So not the hot but they're like, what can we do with this plant that's not
I suppose they'd argue they're pushing the limits of Scoville heat units in order to make this big window underneath where you can like grow sideways and find at the same level of hotness or lower like different flavors.
Well, I think it's interesting as well that that level of chemical heat can actually be potentially functional in medicine, like for anesthetic or whatever it might end up being, or warfare, although we hope that that doesn't happen. I think it's time to move on to our third and final lunchbox.
Yes.
And that is Miss Manu.
Okay, today I wanted to talk about how you stop the burn. Once you've eaten the crazy chili, how do you stop?
Did you bring some milk?
I bought a few things.
Oh!
Some cheese.
Oh, yes.
It's a high-protein cheese. We've got ice cream.
Yay!
And we have vodka.
And some milk.
And some milk. So I wanted to talk about how we can get this capsaicin out of our mouths and how different things interact with it.
Of course.
This is on-the-ground journalism. This is exactly what you need to know. Men who like chili, look away. This is for the girls. This is how to get through your life enjoying hot spice.
So, water.
Yes.
How do we feel about water after chili?
I think water is supposedly a false friend, because what happens is it moves the molecules of the capsaicin around your mouth, making it more spicy.
That is exactly right. Capsaicin is an oily resin.
Right.
Water and oil famously do not get on. So water is just going to do that. It's going to swirl the chili around your mouth. If anything, it's going to make it stick to other bits of your mouth, bind to other receptors, really intensify the heat. Fizzy water, even worse. So carbonated drinks that are water-based, big no-no. Beer, again, no. Basically, fizzy carbonated drinks activate similar TRPA receptors. Ah. So not exactly the same ones, but they do trigger similar pain fizzy receptors, and they just intensify the burn.
Okay.
It's not going to help.
All right.
One thing that might help a bit is beer. Not because it's fizzy, we just said no, but the alcohol actually does dissolve the capsaicin a little bit.
Oh.
So a really, really high proof alcohol like vodka might actually help with the capsaicin burn.
Spicy marg.
And that's why you have to have, because in a spicy marg, sometimes a jalapeno ain't going to cut it. And people, I've been seeing these people with bird's eye chilies in their mugs, and I'm just like, you're mental, mate. But actually, it turns out the high proof tequila is probably deleting so much of that spice. Yeah. Interesting.
Yeah, so you can, I mean, we're going to try it. Vodka mouthwash, swilling it around, spitting it out, should help kind of like clean some of that capsaicin out.
Okay.
And then we have a really confusing one. No one knows how it works, but sugar.
Oh.
Sugar might help with the burn.
Ah.
But yeah, scientists haven't been able to figure it out. It could be to do with the way that sugar kind of reacts with bitterness compounds and other flavors. It could confuse it a bit. It could also, this is the one I'm like, this is such bullshit, but we're going to say it anyway. It might also have a slight numbing effect because it triggers our opioid system so strongly. So when we eat something sweet, we're like, num, 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 this is amazing. And then our pain threshold is like heightened a bit because our body is like really happy. And then you have fatty foods. And because capsaicin is an oil binding to those fatty molecules, wicking them away, a little bit like the alcohol. So they kind of stick to the capsaicin before they can bind to your receptors, or like kind of whip them away. And then that kind of dulls the heat.
Mm. Interesting that that's one of them, because probably my favorite genre of spicy food is spicy creamy food, because like I love having something that's very like rich and comforting and coating the back of my throat, you know, like like whatever it might be, a coconutty curry or maybe like a spicy vodka pasta or something like that with double cream in. But part of the enjoyment is like that little bit of heat and then that relaxing cream, you know, that cooling.
It's a good contrast.
Sounds like you said cream, sugar, vodka, a white Russian.
Ooh.
Say again.
So then the last one, the classic one, the ultimate way to beat the chili is milk.
It is milk.
So casein flipping loves capsaicin. Like the protein in dairy is obsessed with capsaicin. So you can imagine it kind of like, you know, if you've got a really oily bit of Tupperware that you've been trying to like wash and wash and wash in the sink, it's not coming off. And then you get a load of detergent. That similar action, the way it just like completely wicks of that sticking.
Cuts through the grease.
Exactly, cuts through the grease. Casein loves capsaicin so much, it will do that. It just like completely cleans it straight off. That's the thing that's going to help you the most. And ice cream in particular. So this is, thank you, Denise Kuhn at the Chili Institute.
That's what I was going to say, because essentially this is hitting a lot of bases, your ice cream.
Yes, so it's sugary.
Yeah.
It's cold, which counteracts the like hot like heat trick that the capsaicin's doing, and it's full of casein.
Yeah.
Amazing. So this is like the ultimate thing that's gonna knock that burn in the head.
Great.
So I think we should actually try some hot chilies and each of us take one of these famous chili cures.
Okay, I'll, as a fanatical cheese fan, I'll take cheese.
Okay, Jack, which one would you like? Ice cream
I'd like
or vodka?
The ice cream.
Okay, I will have vodka then.
Great. So we're going to each try a piece of Scotch bonnet, which is quite a spicy chili.
You ready?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
One, two, three.
Oh, wow.
Oh, dear.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Okay, now I've got it. Okay.
Yeah.
I put the parmesan in.
Oh, my God. It's growing.
I would say with the cheese, it is working. Because I can feel the chili heat on my lip, where it touched my lip more than inside my mouth.
I'm going to say, vodka worked really well. I've got nothing.
Jack, you are a victim of your own problem. You ate the most of that chili. For the listeners out there, Jack is streaming crying.
I had too much. And I regret all my decisions. But ice cream helps.
Yes. Well, you're really crying.
That's it for this week's edition of Lunchbox Envy.
You can follow our socials for foodie facts and podcast updates. We are on YouTube, Facebook, Instagram and TikTok at Lunchbox Envy Pod.
You can also get in touch and send us your facts, recipes, questions or suggestions for future topics by emailing us lunchbox@qi.com.
Rosie, do you have any parting recipes to recommend us?
Well, you can find my piri piri recipe, my Mozambique piri piri recipe.
I like it.
On my Substack newsletter, The Dinner Party. But I also just wanted to recommend specifically a chef. You may have come across her before. Her name is Easter Belfridge. She is an incredible wrangler of chili spice. She uses them in ways that I think we often don't conceive to use them for. So use them. So I would just say check out Easter's work. She has two cookbooks out and she has a great Instagram too.
Fantastic.
Maybe, certainly me and Manu, potentially not Jack. We'll see you next week. Goodbye.
Bye.
Bye.
Lunchbox Envy was hosted by Jack Chambers, Manu Onrio, and me, Rosie McKean. It was produced by Alex Bell. This has been a quite interesting podcast.